tomorrow all the things were gone. I worked for all my life, and I had to start again. Just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Well, good morning, Columbia and Greene counties in the wonderful but highly taxed state of New York. You're tuned to The Right Opinion Show on WGXC 90.7 FM ACRA, and my name is Ed Furtick. I'm your host today. Now, today our guest is Democrat State Senator Cecilia Kacik, the first Democrat office holder to appear on The Right Opinion Show. And we're happy to have her here. Now, Senator Kacik came into office by defeating Republican George Amador by just 18 votes. And these two will be fighting it out again in this current election cycle. Hopefully, Mr. Amador will also be appearing on this show, and I've already reached out to him. Now, let's get started with our interview of Senator Cecilia Kacik, which was pre-recorded on March 28th.
We're almost ready to wrap up the budget. So this is a pre-recorded session. So I don't know what's in the budget yet. We will know probably over the weekend, and the public will hear. So the public will hear this recording when the budget's out. So.
Well, as long as all you folks know what's in the budget the day before it comes out, then we're making some progress here. But I want to start this show off, as usual, with getting a little feel for who you are, where you come from, how were you earning your living before you became a politician, or maybe you're still doing it that way, and how did you get into politics?
I'd be happy to share.
Is that a long enough question?
I will try to synthesize and keep it focused on. I grew up on a dairy farm. I have a BS in agricultural science, so I have a really strong farming background. My sister and I started milking the cows as soon as we could lift those milk machines. We had a dumping station, so you had to be able to lift the machine full of milk. So you had to lift at least about 50 pounds before you could do the milking. But as soon as we could do that, my sister and I did all the milking on our farm. My brothers drove the tractors. I really resented that. I thought that was an easier job, to drive the tractors. I got to college because I had a great public school system and I had affordable college. I went to Rutgers and I met my husband there, my future husband. We ended up moving to Boston. We were there for 4 years while he was in graduate school, and then I moved to New York State. So I've been in New York since 1989. I grew up in New Jersey. But since 1989, I've been living on a small farm in Duanesburg, which is western part of Schenectady County, and we have sheep. But we also, he and I both work full-time, and we have a 14-year-old son. I spent a lot of years working with not-for-profits that do affordable housing and community development. And I worked for a statewide association of these not-for-profit groups. So I was working around the legislative process in Albany. And then for 2 years, I actually worked for the Senate Democrats when they were in the majority, and I was a housing policy analyst. So I worked on the inside. So I saw it from the outside, and I've seen it from the inside. And frankly, I was there on the Senate floor helping prepare senators for a floor debate, and I decided, you know what, maybe I could do this. And frankly, maybe I should do this, because some of them aren't doing a very good job of it.
Mm-hmm.
I was also sitting on my local school board, and I was really frustrated with what was happening with public education. because I'm seeing the impact on rural areas, the impact on farmers, and it doesn't, you know, what we were doing in education was not making common sense to me. You were forcing schools like mine, which compared to other schools are affordable and doing a really good job of educating our kids. 80% of our kids go to college of their choosing. You know, our graduation rates are over 90%.
You mean New York State?
My school district.
Oh, your school district.
My school district.
Okay.
So, but because we rely more on state aid in a rural school, when the Great Recession hit and they took so much money out of the school budgets, those cuts hurt small city and rural schools more because we rely more on state aid. And we didn't have the ability to recover from those cuts. So we were left with cutting programming or raising taxes or decimating our reserve fund or savings account. Not good options. So when the seat opened up, as you'll remember, in 2012 was a redistricting year. So they added a Senate seat. We used to have 62. Now we have 63 senators. And the seat they added was in this kind of rural area around the Capital District. It includes all of Montgomery County, the western portion of Schenectady County, where I live, the Guilderland, New Scotland, and the Hilltowns in Albany County, all of Greene, and a big chunk of Ulster County was added as its own Senate district. And I happened to live in it, and I thought, you know what, why don't I run? Because I care about issues that are important to my
community. It almost seems like it was meant to be.
I think
the district was formed around you.
When I first saw it, I said, look at that. They drew a district just for me.
Right. And that's a 46th Senate district.
Yes.
And you were in a tightly fought battle with George Amador, was it?
Yes. He was the sitting assembly member at the time.
And we'll talk about that later. But what interested me was your housing experience, because I was actually an analyst for the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. That was my career. Oh. I was a enforcement analyst, and that was over 20 years of experience at HUD. So now, how did you get your housing experience?
Well, when I moved to New York State, I was looking for work in the not-for-profit field because I'm interested in work where people bring community members together and give back. I liked working on issues that I could really spend. I get very passionate about what I do, and I wanted to work in a field that was something I really cared about. And so I was working for not-for-profits who were trying to improve their neighborhoods. And it was important to me that when you advocate for an organization, that you really believe in what they're doing.
Sure.
And this was an entity that I really supported.
Okay. So so now, what year are we talking about when you ran for the new seat?
2012. And I got elected.
And you got elected.
It was, as you said, it was a close election. It was essentially too close to call on election night.
Right.
In November.
Exciting.
And, well...
Unless you're a candidate.
Yes.
Then it's nerve-wracking. But yeah, I think you won by 18 votes.
At the end, I won by 18 votes. But we had to go through 2 months of wrangling over the absentee ballots and paper ballots. Because it was too close to call, we had to count the absentee ballots. And that's when the lawyers get involved.
Uh-huh.
And I was basically fighting to make sure that all the ballots got counted. And they... at the end, you know, the lower level court declared my opponent the victor. Then we appealed. We went to the appellate division, which is a panel of 5 judges, and they unanimously made a decision that we had to open more ballots. And when we opened more ballots, I won by 18. So I finally got seated January 23rd, 2013.
Wow.
So I've been sitting as a senator for a little over a year.
Well, George, I hope you're off antidepressants at this point. So, but that was a close one. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And it doesn't seem to me like you're what we would call a career politician, because you're pretty new to the game, actually, and a farmer.
Yes, I still have a sheep farm.
Yeah. You know, I was in Chatham, New York, yesterday, and I saw something that I hadn't seen before. This is indicative of our modern times. I saw a woman who could have been you. She was wearing cowboy boots, jeans, but her boots had the, the things on the back, the spurs. So she was wearing cowboy boots with spurs, but she had a Bluetooth unit on her head. And I said, wow, that is so cool. Yeah. And I told her, I said, you are the first person I've seen with spurs and Bluetooth. And she told me that she broke horses for a living. And, you know, you want your hands free when you're communicating. Oh, that made perfect sense to me.
Yeah. So where was the horse?
Now, well, she was in a gas station, so she couldn't have been with the horse. But, I guess she had a pickup truck.
Well, I do have boots on today. And
I can verify that. Not cowboy boots,
not cowboy,
but they are boots.
And I don't mind getting them dirty.
That's good. I know exactly what you mean. Well, anyway, so you get into the Senate, and what was it like coming off the farm and finding yourself in the New York State Senate? And what was it like those first few weeks and months?
I have to say it was pretty cool.
Uh-huh.
Because we worked so hard, and it wasn't just me. There were so many people who got involved in my campaign, and people who volunteered, who knocked on doors with me, and it was really a grassroots campaign. I remember one day after I had a three-way primary too. I mean, nothing about my race was easy. And
typical.
And after the three-day primary, I remember we had an open house at our campaign headquarters, and all these people kept coming in that I had no idea who these people were. And one woman came up to me. She was with her 15-year-old daughter, and she said, I don't live in your district. And I'm thinking, why are you here then? And she said, I'm here because I want my daughter to meet someone who's running for office, someone who's going to be a leader. I want her to see herself doing what you're doing. How do I sign up? I'm working on your campaign.
Wow.
I'm going to make phone calls. So it was that kind of support that really helped me win. And I really feel like my race, the voters decided.
Doesn't that make you feel good?
It does.
I ran for office once, and recently, and I lost. But I remember getting an email from someone. I wasn't at home. I got an email, and someone said, "Ed, I left a few signs for you at your house. I made a few signs." So I assumed, you know, little signs. No, these were big wooden things with 2x4s and plywood and fancy lettering. And there were like three of them. I said, oh, my. I mean, it really makes you feel good. Someone likes me. I know I'm going to get at least two votes.
Well,
me and the sign maker.
I think my race showed that when you get involved, it really matters. And people's votes matter. And when you vote, your vote should be counted. So I think I showed that it really does matter. Going out and voting makes a difference. And I really encourage people, whatever your political persuasions, it's really important that you go out and vote.
I don't know that much about your district is Greene County and Ulster County, and I guess it's the same everywhere. But in Columbia County, where I live, we have had some nail biters. I mean, we have had town councilmen here get elected by one vote.
Wow.
With a few hundred cast, we've had, in fact, in my situation, I came in third, but the number of votes I got was quite a bit more than the incumbent lost by. So some people are attributing the spoiler role to me. But yeah, your point is well taken. Every vote does count, and I get very upset with people who don't know that, or who think that, well, you know what, I'm going to vote one way, someone else is going to vote the other way, it balances out, so I don't have to show up. But I like people that have, you know, whether I agree with you or not, I prefer that you're a person that has a viewpoint, and that you actually formed your viewpoint by doing a little homework, rather than either having a strong viewpoint without really knowing what you're talking about, or just not caring. And there is some apathy going on. Wouldn't you agree? Political apathy?
I think the more we know about our political system and get involved, the better we as a society can make decisions in the best interests of people who live here and pay our taxes. It's important that I know what people are thinking. So the reason why I started off with the phone numbers, it's sincere. I do want to hear from folks. And I've spent a lot of time getting out and meeting as many people as I could once session was over. We're only in session from January to the end of June, and then we're not in session until January again. And I got a new car last May. I have over 35,000 miles on it already. And I kind of consider my car my fourth office.
Yeah, assembly members, in my opinion, I think we might have talked about this when I first met you at the wonderful Crossroads Pub.
Yeah, that was a great event.
And by the way, folks, the senator wasn't out boozing. We were at a function, and I happened to meet her at this function, and I think we talked about term limits and how it's pretty stressful to be on a 2-year cycle, because it seems like you always have to be running.
It seems like you're always running.
It seems like you're, well, it doesn't seem like it. I mean, you are.
But
and
the event,
it's unfair,
was a great event.
That was a great event.
WGXC's third anniversary.
Yes.
And it's, like I said, it's great to have these community radio stations in place that give us an opportunity to talk directly.
It was our third anniversary. The event was lovely. Both you and State Senator Marchione honored the work we've been doing at WGXC during that event. So we're grateful for that. We're glad that we're being noticed. And I like the fact that we can give a voice to politicians, and I hope that, you know, you feel comfortable being here.
And one of the things that I was hoping we could talk about is education funding.
Yeah, we're going to, because one thing I heard from Senator Marchione was that, in her opinion, and you can agree with this or not, you know, Senator Marchione is a Republican, you're a Democrat, but she said, in her opinion, the Common Core issue did not have a party. She felt that going around that there was opposition to Common Core across the political spectrum. And I've been told, I don't know if this is true, that you are actually opposed to Common Core.
Well, I'm not opposed to Common Core. I'm upset with how it was implemented.
Okay.
The Common Core, I think we have to be clear and explain what it is. It's raising the standards. So it's identifying goals where you want children to achieve. And I don't think anyone is opposed to more rigor in the classroom or holding people accountable. But when you implement changes in our education system, you have to give the folks on the ground who are trying to implement these changes the time and the ability to implement the changes. That's not what happened. We, as a state, said we're going to adopt these new Common Core standards. And by the time we got that down to the level of the school districts, we didn't have all the information in place, and we didn't give the schools time to start teaching and transitioning to these new standards. And then we started testing the kids immediately. And that, to me, was really didn't quite make sense. You're causing a lot of frustration and stress in
right.
the classroom
and
unnecessarily.
Yeah, and so the teachers, I don't think, by and large, are are happy with it because of some of the factors that you just mentioned. The students certainly would be under a little stress from it.
I'll give you an example.
And the parents, I've met parents that are really up in arms about it because of, you know, their adorable children are being stressed out by it, and they didn't seem to have any say in the matter.
Well, we're changing so much in education all at once. We're changing what we're teaching children, how we're teaching it, how we're measuring progress that children are making, and how we're evaluating our teachers on whether or not they're doing a good job. All at the same time.
It's a lot.
At the same time that we've been cutting funding to our schools. And remember, we mentioned this earlier, especially our rural and small city schools have been reeling from the cuts to their education budget. So they've lost a lot of teachers and staff. And this is a huge unfunded mandate that we're placing on them. And it's been just not well planned out.
So what are you and your colleagues doing about it? What action steps are being taken by you specifically or by the Senate in general to deal with these issues that you just mentioned?
Yeah, there's a number of things that are going on. One, the budget is about to get adopted. I was looking for a number in the budget that reflects what the Board of Regents was recommending, that we see an increase in the education budget of $1.3 billion. In the Senate and the Assembly, one House budget bills did not come close to that number. That's really important because if we don't have the resources going into our schools that our schools need, we're not getting rid of the gap elimination adjustment, which is this money we owe the schools from the cuts that we placed on them, and we're not recognizing their increased costs over the years. Schools are getting money now that they're funded at the same level as they were in 2008 and 2009. Costs continue to rise. They've been shrinking as much as they can, being as efficient as they can. They've been cutting a lot. They're cutting into educational programming. That's one problem, making sure the budget is adequate for the schools. Second, making sure the Board of Regents is doing their job. We recently voted for positions on the Board of Regents. This is a group of, I think it's 17, who oversee education policy in the state. And in my view, have not been doing a good job of really recognizing the challenges our schools are facing and making sure that our schools have the resources and time to implement these new changes. So I wanted to see new people on the Board of Regents who actually have a better understanding and a better connection of public schools.
You know, I think it was, I don't know, a month ago, I read something in the Albany Times Union that the Board of Regents was on the verge of amending Common Core implementation so that the current fourth graders, I think it was, would not have to meet the standard until they were graduating high school. And those who were beyond the fourth grade currently would not be subject to it. And then the very next day, the paper said that they had decided not to vote that way. I think I lost track of it at that point.
Yes, so the Board of Regents came out with some recommendations on making changes to the implementation of the Common Core standards.
The chronology
as well. And when, because we have to phase it in, and when which grade level would have to meet those standards in order to receive a graduation certificate. And then the issue that was changed was, I think they said that they would agree to a moratorium on the use of the data from the tests. And I think that the next day the governor was opposed to that, so they backed away from that a little bit. So the point I wanted to make is the Board of Regents has even recognized that they didn't do this very well, and now they're coming up with changes. Well, the horse is out of the barn, and now you're trying to corral the horse mm-hmm. back. So you didn't do it right the first time,
right?
Which is what I'm annoyed with. And so I wanted to see new people get on the Board of Regents who would really help make sure that the policies we're putting in place make sense in the classroom.
How do you select people who get on the Board of Regents? Well, how do they get there? How would you want them to get there? How are they getting there right now?
I don't
have the slightest idea, quite frankly.
So every year there's an election. The Senate and Assembly come together and have a joint session, and we elect the Board of Regents. Historically, it's been a selection process that's been completely controlled by the Assembly. And they, the recommendations come through their side, and we just vote them up or down. There were four vacancies, people who were being reappointed. Initially, they were going to just reappoint the four people whose terms were up. And there was a lot of discussion and more participation in the interview process. One of those regents decided to remove himself at the last minute, and they put in someone else. So I voted against all four of them because I wanted to see more significant change on the Board of Regents. So there was more participation in the process, and I think you'll see moving forward, hopefully we'll get more new people on the Board of Regents who take this job very seriously and be held accountable. So now, that's one way. The other thing you asked about making changes for the Common Core is we can pass legislation. There's been several bills that have passed through the Senate and Assembly Education Committee, or even came up on the floor of the Assembly. So there's things like we don't want to see testing for children who are in like pre-K through grade 2. We don't want to see them be given tests that aren't necessary. And that, I think is
okay. So the state, that the states on. Are voluntarily getting involved with Common Core, although some would argue that it's not really that voluntarily because there are some. There's some stipulations attached, but you're saying the states can make changes to it at their own discretion?
We can make some modifications on some pieces of it.
The feds are okay with that?
Well, the state education department has asked for some waivers of the federal, from the feds,
okay,
on some Common Core issues. For example, I've been concerned about how the Common Core is being implemented with children with special needs.
Okay.
And one of the problems I see is that a child may be at a reading grade level of, for example, third grade, but chronologically they're at fifth grade. They're being given the fifth grade test, mm-hmm, even though they are not going to do well because it's not given to them at the current level that they're at. I want to see some ability for the schools to make accommodations and give children appropriate tests. Mm-hmm. So I'm really bothered that we're doing this across the board testing and not making those types of adjustments.
Okay.
And the State Education Department has asked the federal government for a waiver in some aspects for children with special needs. We're not sure if the federal government's going to give them that waiver. So these are some of the issues that we're grappling with that, frankly, we should have resolved and worked out before we started implementing these changes, because we have. So to me, the implementation was not well thought out and not planned.
I understand that. Now, just from a philosophical standpoint, because we want to get your philosophy out there, I don't think I've ever met a parent that didn't want their child to have a good education. Maybe there are some, but most parents know that a good education has value, and they want their children to have every advantage they can have. And whether they're in Butte, Montana, or Brooklyn, New York, parents certainly want the best for their children, and they want them to have good educations. But Common Core isn't only about good education, it's about standardized education, it's about the same education. So, I mean, do you feel that a child being educated in Butte, Montana should have exactly the same education as a child growing up in Brooklyn, New York. I mean, why should they?
Well, I think we have to look at the schools in our state and see how this works for us. And I think when you talk to educators, they're looking for, I think, more flexibility to get more deeply involved in subjects and helping kids become more analytical thinkers. And I think that's kind of one of the goals of the Common Core standards. I'll give you an example of one of the standards for kindergartners. Before, you used to be able to expect them to count from 1 to 20. With the new Common Core standards, you want them to count from 1 to 100 and do it by singles and also by tens. Well, they're going to need more time to practice that. And that's a good thing that we have them counting better and learning their letters earlier. But you need all day kindergarten.
Right.
You need time for these children to practice right. and be in
but,
the classroom.
But you're talking more here about implementation, and I'm back to philosophy. I mean, philosophically, why wouldn't a state as sophisticated as New York, I mean, we have New York City, we have big school districts all over the state of New York, we have intelligent, well-educated parents all over our state. We have educational institutions all over our state. We have Columbia University. We have New York University. We have well-known high schools. And why wouldn't New York State, without the help of the feds, be knowledgeable enough about educating our children to come up with these kind of advancements on their own? Why does this have to come from Washington?
Well, because it came with money.
That's a good, I like that. I'm getting to like you.
With the promise that we're going to give you $750 million, but we want you to adopt these standards.
That's a great answer. But right now, I just want to remind listeners that this is WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Hudson, and Catskill. And you're listening to The Right Opinion Show. My name is Ed Furtick. I am your host. And today's guest is Cecilia Kacik. I just can't get it right. Who is the state senator for the 46th Senate District. And as usual, we're going to go to a little break song now with... hopefully, this will be Tanya Tucker, and hope you enjoy it, folks.
Looking at you through a misty moonlight, Kitty did sing like a symphony. Porch swing swaying like a Tennessee lullaby, melody blowing through a willow tree. What was I supposed to do? Standing there looking at you, lonely boy, far from home. Maybe it was Memphis, maybe it was southern summer nights, maybe it was you, maybe it was me, but it sure felt right. Well, now I read about you in a Faulkner novel.
Excuse me, folks, that's Pam Tillis. Maybe it was Memphis.
Maybe it was you, maybe it was me, but it sure felt right. Every night now since I've been back home, I wake drifting in the memory. Think about you on my mama's front porch swing, talking that way so soft to me. What was I supposed to do?
That was Pam Tillis, and Maybe It Was Memphis. I didn't expect to play that, but it's a great song. I think it was meant to be. I might play that again on another show. Pam Tillis, thank you very much. So we're back here, and let's get into the interview. I want to read you a couple of articles and get your response. To this, I was quite very surprised, and there are a couple of people affiliated with the station who live in Greene County. They were pretty surprised when I showed them this. It was, I guess, about 2 weeks ago in the Albany Times Union, and I'm, folks, I know you can't see me, but I'm scurrying around on my smartphone right now trying to actually find the article so that I don't have to paraphrase it. So I think I'm going to be successful. So just bear with me, and I'll keep talking to fill up the radio time, because dead air is something you don't want on radio. Okay, Senator, the article was titled "Housing Expense Difficult for Many." The writer was Jordan Carlio Evangelist for the Albany Times Union. And I'll just read the first few paragraphs. That a New York City borough, Bronx County, topped the list Monday of those with the least affordable rents was hardly a surprise. The surprise was a runner-up, which was not across the Harlem River in the gleaming high-rises of Manhattan, but about 115 miles up the Hudson River in mostly rural Greene County, according to a new analysis by State Controller Tom DiNapoli's office. In 2012, 57% of Greene County renters' housing costs exceeded 30% of their income, which is the federal benchmark for affordable housing, bad enough for 61st out of New York's 62 counties, DiNapoli found. That's up from 40% in 2000, with three other Hudson Valley counties, Ulster, Rockland, and Orange, not far behind. The rankings are based on a combination of local incomes and housing costs culled from census data, and according to DiNapoli, suggests troubling implications for our economic growth and our quality of life. So, yeah, when I read this, I was surprised. The Bronx and then Greene County. Now, this obviously is not a reflection on Well, maybe it is, but I don't have any reason to believe that based on what I just read. I don't think it's a reflection on the fact that the rents are so high. I think it's more a reflection on the fact that the incomes are so low. I might be wrong about that. But
I would agree with you
on
that. Yeah,
but what's going on with this? I mean, and what can we do about it?
Well, there's a couple things. You mentioned that I think we should reiterate. We say housing is affordable if you're spending 30% or less of your income on housing. And what the report showed is that people are spending a lot more percentage of their income for housing. And you would think that there's plenty of housing available. You see a lot of, you know, empty apartments above storefronts in some towns. You think, well, there's got to be affordable housing. But I think the income aspect is really what's driving that problem.
Right.
People are not making enough money to afford the market rents.
But why?
And you have a lot of old housing stock, so right. It may not be a suitable housing mm-hmm. stock.
But why should the incomes be so low in Greene County? There, it seems like it would have quite a bit going for it because you're within 2 hours of New York City. That can't be bad. You're not far from the capital of New York. You have one of the most traveled thoroughfares in the country going right through it. You have the beautiful Catskills, skiing, hunting, fishing. Why did it get to this?
Well, I think if you have a good paying job, you're not having a problem finding housing
right.
or getting affordable housing. But if you're at minimum wage,
right,
that's probably, I think, where the problem is. You're not making enough on your one or two minimum wage jobs to provide enough support to your family to afford that housing. That's why you see the number so high, and so many people are spending more than 50%. So they're, you know, maybe one paycheck away from homelessness, and they're really struggling is what I hear when I hear a statistic like that. And a lot of times we're seeing more working families working one or two jobs at minimum wage. They don't have health insurance. Somebody gets sick, you know, so it's easy to have a financial crisis when you don't have enough resources to manage.
Well, there's no doubt that if your income was higher for doing the same job that you're currently doing, that would help the statistic. But do you think Greene County has the potential to develop more professional jobs that do pay more? And, you know, why hasn't that happened so close to Albany? And
the key is the potential.
Uh-huh.
As you mentioned all these attributes, it's a great county.
Yeah.
And there's, I think, a great opportunity for growth. And there's been some exciting news recently. There's a new distributor of plumbing supplies that's coming into the area in Greene County. They're going to be hiring, I think, up to 170 people to work in their facility. That's just getting off the ground. You know, they've got to build it first. So we're seeing some good news coming. We're seeing some better paying jobs opening up, because we've lost a lot of jobs.
Do you think the casinos could help the situation? What's your stance on casinos coming to New York, and can that help Greene County?
Well, the referendum passed. So mm-hmm. there will be a development of casinos in some areas. Where those casinos get developed isn't known yet.
But do you want them in your senatorial district?
I want them wherever the local municipality and local citizens mm-hmm. welcome them.
Okay.
And, you know, it's not up to me. I'm a state senator representing five counties. They could be located anywhere in my district.
But are your constituents, you know, coming to you, calling you, say, hey, we could really use the jobs from a casino in our town. Catskill would love to have a casino. Are you hearing anything like that?
Yeah, in Ulster County, there's definitely mm-hmm. interest in Ellenville, which isn't in my district, but clearly there's interest in Ulster County. Montgomery County just passed resolutions on the local, city, and town level to support an interest in a casino there. So it is getting talked about, and I think wherever it's developed, it will definitely create jobs. The Lafarge cement plant, it's not in Greene County, but it's nearby. They're about to embark on a $300 million renovation to really help deal with some environmental issues. So we're going to see a lot of construction type of work going on there that should help people in Greene County. They want to use local labor and local contractors. So I think there's some good news coming on the horizon that will help create jobs. The other thing that's happening in Catskill, one of the founders of the Etsy company.
Yes, they have their headquarters right here in Hudson, a few blocks from our studio.
They're redeveloping a huge building in downtown Catskill. I think that's very exciting.
That is exciting. I didn't know that.
That's going to be hopefully bringing more artists to the area to reside in this building and work and have a restaurant. So there's exciting things happening. I was just in Catskill the other week. The local pizza shop that had been burned.
I like their pizza.
Village Pizza has reopened.
Yes, very good pizza there. Shout out to Village Pizza people.
There are over 100 people there at their reopening.
Mm-hmm.
People love this pizza and the family.
Yeah,
they want to see this thriving little downtown village. And so I see some new stores opening up. So it's very exciting to see that type of development happening. And I think that the housing will come as people, you know, struggle with affordability and housing. You can help support the construction and development of affordable housing, and you can also make sure that there's good paying jobs for people in the area. So you've got to work on both ends of that. So I know the governor has supported doing more affordable housing development and committed more money to the construction side of things. And this type of a study helps us pinpoint, like, hey, we need some of that housing support here in Greene County. And one of those programs is called there's a number of different programs, but making sure that we're redeveloping the existing infrastructure in places like Catskill, you know, making sure that there's housing opportunities there that are getting rehabbed and reinvented. And that helps our thriving little downtowns when we have decent, affordable housing right there in the downtown. And then people can walk to the local store and the post office. So it's exciting to see some of those things starting to come together.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, back to the disparity between income and rents, it occurred to me long ago, actually, that, you know, getting to work, if you're a low-income person, especially a person on minimum wage, because of the price of gasoline, you're really limited as to where you can go to work. I mean, after all, there's a limit to how much you can spend on gasoline.
And car repairs.
And car repairs.
You probably don't have a new car.
Right. So, you know, if you're earning $100,000 a year and you have to commute 80 or 100 miles a day to get to work, it might not be a big issue. But what I'm getting at here is the state tax on gasoline is higher than I'm not sure it's higher than every state, but certainly almost every state. I think it's 47 cents a gallon. So, you know, you have people on minimum wage who have to give the state 47 cents a gallon just to get to work. I don't know if that's fair. And then, of course, the federal excise tax is 17 cents a gallon. So on a 10-gallon tank of gas, you're talking $6 or $7 just in taxation. I would love to see the state ease that burden. To a lot of people, it wouldn't make a big difference. But to a lot of people, having an extra $50 a month that they're not spending on gasoline taxes is a big deal. It can really help.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just throwing that out there to you. I Senator Marchione, for example, told me that she does not, as in general, she does not hear people bring up get the tax on gasoline.
You're the first one I've heard this from.
Uh-huh.
So I'm glad. I haven't heard this from, you know, others, but yeah. you're the first. So
I mean, would you agree that it's not insignificant monetarily speaking?
No, those are significant figures. If that's the case, that's mm-hmm. a lot of money going to taxes.
It is. Okay, well, let's jump to another issue and have a little fun here for a minute. What do you? Oh well, no. I have this other article that I wanted to read. We just printed this out just before showtime from the Mid-Hudson News Network. Dutchess County ranked 11th statewide in health outcomes, Ulster 29. It says Mid-Hudson counties varied widely in health outcomes according to the annual report released Wednesday by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute. Dutchess ranked highly, Ulster was in the middle of the pack, and Green and Sullivan counties were near the bottom. The counties were compared on 29 factors that impact health, including smoking, high school graduation rates, unemployment, physical inactivity, and access to healthy foods. That's pretty fascinating, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, we're out here in the country. Green County is right next to Columbia County, which is 80% farmland. It seems like people are not eating healthy. People are not exercising. It doesn't seem like something that would be happening in a place like Greene County.
Again, it's fascinating to hear these studies and looking at the statistics, and it makes you ask questions why. And I certainly want to explore with folks at Greene County is you know, has this been, I've only been on the job for a year,
yeah.
but this is clearly one of those areas that
yeah.
I think Greene County has been in that end of the spectrum for quite a while. And is it, you know, and what are the reasons why they're continuing to lag? And I think you have to compare to the other counties. What are they doing differently? And I think when you have a very rural county, access to resources and assistance is one of the issues
right.
in healthcare and mental health, for example. And when you're very rural, you have high areas of poverty also. And if you're poor, you're not going to the farmer's market and buying produce.
Excellent you know. Point.
And how do we kind of bridge these gaps and what's really going to make a difference in the health of people? Because when you have access to regular health care and decent food and you're healthier, you have fewer crises that end up having to be taken care of in the emergency room. But if you don't have access to transportation to get to the doctor because you're self-insuring, because you don't have health insurance, you know, you're going to get to that health care provider when you're sicker. It's going to be more costly. Your outcome's going to be less positive.
Very true.
So, you know, so it's a big question with, I don't have all the answers, and something that we need
yeah,
to
it's worth exploring.
Absolutely.
I mean, Greene County is not a county without problems, and they don't seem insurmountable to me. So hopefully things will change over time.
And we have to recognize Greene County doesn't have its own hospital. You have to go to
Hudson
or Hudson to get to the hospital. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't have the preventive care resources and, you know, ability to get
Greene County
addressed, you know, locally. That doesn't mean we're not, we have to make sure we're getting our health care.
That's an excellent point. Greene County is really a very rural place.
It's more challenging.
And it's
and making sure that people, when they're in their homes, have the support to stay in their homes longer. So there's more things you can do with telemedicine and over the internet to gauge people's vital signs, for example. But if you don't have rural broadband internet access, you're not able to do that as effectively.
Right.
So one of the things I want to see that I think will help our education and our businesses and people have access to more economic opportunities is to make sure we're having rural broadband access throughout the county. And that's a real challenge that I know the county has been working on, and I'm interested in helping them. And you know, there's because of the topography, it's definitely challenging to get rural broadband access out there to everyone. But that's something that we need to work on. That's going to help everybody both take care of themselves and their families and access more jobs. And if you want people to come and visit your county, which is, you know, tourism is a big economic driver for Greene County, you need to be able to be on the internet. I mean, people are getting so much information through their cell phones these
days.
Yeah,
I think you're on to something.
They can't find out
young
about
people,
your bed breakfast or your farm.
Yeah, young people don't read posters or look in magazines much. You need to communicate with them on the internet. Well, we're nearing the end of the show. This is WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre Hudson in Catskill. My name is Ed Furtick, otherwise known as Eddie F on Radio. And we've been having a great interview here. Now, Senator, are there any announcements quickly that you'd want to make about events coming up after the airtime of the show, like after April 9th? Is there anything you want to say in regard to events that you think people should know about?
I don't have anything planned specifically in Greene County, but once the budget is settled, I'll be reaching out and talking to folks about what's in it and what it means for their communities. Hopefully, I'll be meeting with some chambers of commerce coming up, events like that. But if people have things they want me to come to, feel free to call my office either in Kingston or in Albany and let us know about an event. And if there's something you want me to come to, please invite me. And I'd love to get out and talk to folks and see how we can work together to solve some of the issues that we all face, because we're all in this together. I have three offices, and since we're here in the area that covers Greene County, I have a district office in Kingston, and folks should feel free to call me there or in my Albany office. And the Kingston phone number is?
The Kingston phone number is 845-331-3810. And why not give the Albany number as well?
The Albany office is 518-455-2470. And we love to hear from folks. So if you see something during the legislative session that you want to weigh in on, please call our Albany office, because that's where the legislative action is happening.
All right. And the senator's Twitter feed is at SENTKACZYK. So tweet her. And the Kingston office number again is 845-331-3810. It has been delightful to have you here on The Right Opinion. Hope to have you back at some point in the future. Thank you again to Dan Peluso, who's been sitting here heating up his smartphone, and Talia Rivera for the scheduling. So we're going to go out with a little Roy Orbison today. I promise you it really will be Roy Orbison, unless I've made even a bigger mistake than last time. So here we go, folks, and stay tuned for Tyson coming up, as always, with Zooms. Thanks very much. Bye, folks.
Thanks for having me on, Ed.
My pleasure.
I was all right for a while. I could smile for a while. But I saw you last night. You held my hand so tight as you stopped to say hello. Oh, you wished me well. You couldn't tell that